Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I'm a little bit worried because I haven't seen much lately about Barack Obama. What's happened to his campaign? Where has he gone? He's disappeared.
Well, he has only been on all three networks simultaneously all the time.
More or less constantly.
Either all the time or constantly.
It's easier to be on all networks all the time if you are hanging out with all three of their anchors all the time.
It's been a very, very good week for Barack Obama, including as we speak, we're doing this podcast just several hours after his speech in Berlin, where he basically told Mr. Gorbachev to tear down that wall.
I thought that was a brave move.
It was.
Brave move.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And I think that Gorbachev has already said
Gorbachev has
already said that he will tear down any wall that Barack Obama wants him to tear down.
As he should.
And, you know, I thought it was a good gesture on his part, private citizen as he is. But at any rate, Barack Obama, I would argue, has not had all that much to say the last 4 or 5 days, but it hasn't mattered because it's the pictures.
Right, right.
It's all about the pictures.
I think when you think of great moments in Barack Obama's oratory, I think of course, the Philadelphia speech. Right? I think of the South Carolina victory primary, which I think is
extraordinary January. I thought after Wisconsin in February.
And New Hampshire as well, even in defeat. And, of course, in Boston in 2004.
This was not anywhere near being on that level.
And yet, it seemed, I hate to use this word, it seemed presidential.
Oh, you don't hate to use that word, Ken. You're a member of the media conspiracy.
I am.
All you want to do is build up Barack Obama 24/7.
I get chills down my leg.
No, it's supposed to be up your leg, but that's go up or down your leg.
No, that was the Minneapolis restroom with Larry Craig. No, but this is different. This is different, I dare say.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't think he really said much. I mean, there's nothing he said that said, wow, that's something I'll remember, you know, while I go on the metro tonight. But look, we've also had 8 years of not the greatest speechmaker in the White House, shall we say.
Particularly not when he's overseas.
Right. And we also have a Republican opponent who has had a kind of a rocky week.
Rhetorically challenged.
He
said some things he shouldn't have said. Said some things that weren't true. Said some things that were in the past. Czechoslovakia.
But Barack Obama, in the latest poll I just saw, what he has, a 4-point lead over
Johnson? 4, 5, 6, depends on which poll you look at. Some are even smaller. Right. The daily tracking polls are as small as 2 points, which is essentially no lead at all. It's within the statistical margin
and
of
some
error.
States like Colorado, Minnesota, McCain has
moving made. Moving back towards McCain.
Exactly.
Now, let's throw out a theory as to why this might be, because Barack Obama is getting this absolute riot and orgy of media attention for his, let's face it, pretty successful show out on the hustings of Afghanistan, Iraq, Amman, Jordan, Israel. Now he's into Europe.
And the Iraq-Pakistani border.
Going fairly well for him. And yet, even with all of that, John McCain is actually creeping up in the polls, or at least Barack Obama does not seem to be getting any kind of a bounce in the polls from this.
Theory.
People see the pictures. It's creating an image. Maybe in the long run, it's going to make him look more presidential and help his campaign. But in the short run, John McCain is down on the ground, and with the missteps and with the unfortunate imagery, he's still getting in some jabs, and he's still making some points. Among them, this offshore oil drilling issue, where he says, let's open up anything, let's do anything we can to increase the supply. That's where a bare majority of the American people stand right now, and it's helping John McCain. It's hurting Barack Obama that he's against it. And some of these other things that Barack Obama is saying that may help him among that community that pays a lot of attention to international travel and pays a lot of attention to international opinion, there's a price to be paid in terms of American public opinion for having that popularity.
In other words, what you're saying is Europe should not decide who the next president of the United States is. It's we Americans.
Well, of course, we Americans will. But there are a certain number of people who find it slightly off-putting to have a guy who's not president yet swanning around the world, acting a little bit as though he is already a president. If I become president, he says, yeah, okay, you look pretty smug to me, buddy.
But do you agree, though, it was a pretty amazing sight to see people waving the American flag in Europe? I mean, we haven't seen that in quite a while.
Let me say this about the Berlin speech. It did bring back a little bit of the sense of the chill of Ronald Reagan standing out saying, tear down this wall, the chill that you and I experienced, since you and I do remember John Kennedy actually standing there and saying, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Which means
I am a jelly donut is what it literally means, but I think the Berliners got the idea. You and I still understand how those kinds of moments become iconic and become part of history, become part of the way you think of a president. Yes, in that sense, it's all great. But I thought what we saw in Berlin today was a little bit like Barack Obama's stump speech international version.
Right, right. The audience, of course, was not the folks in Berlin. It was the folks here. Look, the irony of this whole thing was that John McCain baited him to make this trip. He said, look, you haven't been to Iraq since 2006. You've never been to Afghanistan. Why isn't Barack Obama showing his face around the world? Well, here he is showing his face around the world, and he did a pretty darn good job of it.
Let's listen to the line in the speech in Berlin that will probably be excerpted and played most often, maybe even down through history as people remember this speech, if they do.
When you, the German people, tore down that wall, a wall that divided East and West, freedom and tyranny, fear and hope, walls came tumbling down around the world. From Kiev to Cape Town, prison camps were closed and the doors of democracy were opened. Markets open too, and the spread of information and technology reduced barriers to opportunity and prosperity.
Symbolism aside, historical moments aside, what was the substance of this visit that Barack Obama made to the Middle East and to Europe? What was the issue that he moved in terms of how it may affect the race?
Well, Barack Obama now can say that, well, withdrawal is very practical. Maliki himself said that by the end of 2010, all troops would be out. And basically, a lot of people said, well, this sounds like Maliki and Obama are on the same page. Now, of course, Maliki has to say that he doesn't want American occupation, because otherwise it wouldn't be a popular position to have in Iraq.
In Iraq?
Yeah.
So, with his own people.
Right. But a lot of people are now seeing this as a de facto endorsement of Barack Obama's position. Now, this infuriates John McCain because he said, look, first of all, Barack Obama was wrong in opposing the surge all this time. And he still, to this day, says the surge was wrong. And he still says that the involvement in Iraq was wrong. And the American people probably say the involvement in Iraq was wrong. It's galling to John McCain for Barack Obama to take advantage of, in McCain's view, the policies that John McCain has been pushing all along, that the surge, you need more troops to stabilize the situation in Iraq. And of course, by stabilizing the situation in Iraq, the Iraqi government is strong enough to allow or lead to the withdrawal of U.S. troops. So this drives John McCain nuts.
So he has a reasonable viewpoint in saying, look, I advocated the policy courageously.
You opposed it.
You opposed it.
And still oppose it.
It did some good.
Yeah.
Now the situation's gotten better. And you're saying that the better situation ought to serve your solution? And Barack Obama's essentially shrugging his shoulders and saying, sure, why not?
And
especially
the,
if the Iraqis think so.
And the Bush administration is also talking about,
so suddenly talking
not a
about
time
horizon,
exactly.
Aspirational goals.
Right.
But everybody can see they've shifted weight.
Right.
It's over on the other foot now.
Let's just say, for example, the surge has led to the success, and there's a lot of debate in the blogosphere about what happened first, whether the tribesmen spoke out against the Sunni extremists well before the surge happened. But whatever it is, let's just argue, for argument's sake, that the surge helped bring about this situation. John McCain still finds himself the only one not using the word timetable, not saying this should lead to a withdrawal of troops.
Which is why McCain oftentimes in the last week or so has seemed to be just, well, a step or two off the pace. When Barack Obama was in Iraq and meeting with al-Maliki, John McCain was meeting with Bush 41,
yeah.
Poppy,
yeah.
Up at Kennebunkport, riding around in a golf course that said hands off on it. The two of them looked very much like contemporaries, and they looked a generation beyond, well, even you and me, Ken. And it was just not possible for him all through the week to get back in the swim. He tried to go down to New Orleans and have a big dramatic event out on an oil rig,
right,
to maximize his advantage on the oil drilling issue. They had
the Dalai Lama. The Hurricane Dalai Lama.
That's correct. The oil rig, first of all, they have a hurricane that makes it hard to fly down there. And then they have a big oil barge spill right in the New Orleans harbor, which, of course, highlights the one aspect of this issue that people don't like.
Right.
So just bad luck. And then on the day of the speech in Berlin, there's John McCain standing out in front of a German restaurant in Columbus.
I think it's very clear that I said at the most difficult times that I would rather lose a political campaign than lose a war. And that's very clear, and a lot of people said that it might doom my candidacy for President of the United States or the nomination of my party.
What I thought was interesting about that whole thing is, first of all, it was probably a choreographic nightmare. You heard this wind chime constantly in the background, which drowned out much of what John McCain was saying. But he looked petulant. I think one of the arguments, one of the problems with John McCain from the beginning, including from Republicans, has always been that he has this temper, which I think helped undo Bob Dole in 1996. And it could hurt John McCain as
Democrat
well.
Democrat wars.
Democrat, no, Democrat Wars. Stop lying about my record. Right. And it's not even a record. It was an 8-track back then.
Bob Dole would not have a record. Bob Dole would have an 8-track.
Well, speaking of records, by the way, it was very interesting on the McCain website. It was talking about how the media are so in love with Barack Obama.
Can't take my eyes.
So they have two songs, two theme songs that suggest that people vote in, you know, to see what better applies. And one of the songs was Frankie Valli's 1967, Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
Oh, that'd be my choice.
The media's love affair with Barack Obama is all-consuming.
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I mean, I don't have that too often.
Have you seen that whole thing?
I have.
And what did you think?
It was interesting that, first of all, there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, it sounded like it could have come from the Hillary Clinton campaign.
In fact, it did. About two-thirds of it is about the back and forth between supporters of Hillary Clinton and supporters of Barack Obama.
But what you're seeing
and what you're hearing has been excerpted from things that happened in April and May when that was the big issue, the fairness or unfairness of media coverage of Hillary and Barack, not John McCain and Barack.
I hope you do see the irony, though, for John McCain, who has been a media favorite for much of his presidential
campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think John McCain got some good press?
I think he did.
Is it not true that back in, just a few years ago, he described the media to a group of Republicans that he was speaking to and then said, some of you may think of them as the bad guys, or as I think of them, my base.
You know something? I mean, it was the media who
got a big laugh.
Because there was truth to it. The media did fall in love with John McCain in 2000 because he was running against George W. Bush. Now that you're running against Barack Obama, perhaps he's not the media favorite, media darling he was. And I think he misses that so much. But the thought of him complaining about the fact that they're in the tank for Barack Obama is something very quite ironic coming out of John McCain's mouth.
So the polls tightening up in many places, John McCain looking stronger, including in a couple of states that the Democrats are really counting on, like Minnesota and Colorado. But one poll came out this week that was excellent news for Barack Obama. Some people might say it's the most important poll
Latinos?
This week.
Latinos,
yes. The national survey conducted by the nonpartisan Pew Hispanic Center showed that 66% of Hispanic registered voters now support Obama, just 23%, or one-third as many, John McCain.
Well, George W. Bush got 40% in 2004, which I believe was a record for Republican candidates, or at least in recent memory. I suspect John McCain, as the campaign goes on, he will be in the high 30s with Latino voters. I never thought that Barack
Obama... In other words, half again as many as he has now. That's a substantial improvement.
Yes. He's also improved, if you look at also polls with evangelical voters, for all the talk about how the Dr. Dobsons of the world don't trust John McCain, suspect that they may stay home in November. More and more polls show that McCain gaining in strength with evangelical voters.
That makes sense, but it also may be affected by whomever he chooses for his running mate. Because if his running mate is somebody who is pro-choice or someone who has, in some sense or another, a problem with evangelicals, some of those problems could come back. I'm not predicting it would be such a person. In fact, I think you and I are both now leaning towards somebody like Tim Pawlenty, the governor
of
Minnesota.
That is my guess. My guess is Pawlenty.
And partly because he is not just acceptable, but actually highly attractive to evangelical voters.
And plus, there's problems with everybody else. I mean, of course, I think if John McCain had his druthers, perhaps he would pick a Tom Ridge, the former governor of Pennsylvania, former Homeland Security Secretary, with whom he's very close. But there is no way he will pick a pro-choice. Not only is Tom Ridge pro-choice, but
he's a Catholic.
He's a Catholic.
And he's pro-choice.
He's been denied
communion. Which is especially problematic.
He's been denied communion. The last thing John McCain wants is to have to go through this controversy wherever he goes, especially if he's trying to woo a certain block of the Republican coalition. That's why Pawlenty makes a lot of sense.
And so does Rob Portman, by the way.
Well, Rob Portman was my original prediction, and I thought it made complete sense. He's very
smart. A little colorless. A little bit white male.
Well, right.
A little bit like us.
Right.
But he is a very smart guy. He's been OMB director. He's been a congressman. Everybody thinks he provides exactly the kind of savvy on economic and business
issues
that
John McCain is missing.
Exactly.
Except he also provides a link, the imprimatur. The
imprimatur?
Nothing.
Is that like a mythical animal, like a centaur?
No, that's 100 years.
Ah.
Yes, sort of like this podcast. But he reminds everybody of his connection to George W. Bush because basically Rob Portman signed off on every Bush economic policy while he was in the administration.
I think Rob Portman is another one who works, first of all, because he and Tim Pawlenty have this much in common. They do no harm.
Well, you know, that's kind of a shame that you do no harm, because you kind of want a dramatic moment. Remember, for all that...
You mean to settle for something as small as doing no harm,
right,
is
for
a
all
shame.
For all that Geraldine Ferraro brought to the ticket, which I suspect was nothing. I mean, nothing was going to help Walter Mondale in 1984. But if you remember the announcement, it was very, very exciting. It was.
It was. There was fizz.
And they carried Minnesota.
And for one day, they were ahead of Ronald Reagan in the polls right after Geraldine Ferraro was announced. But that turned out to be the last day.
So I don't think Pawlenty or Portman, although I'm leaning toward Pawlenty now, would bring that kind of excitement. But here we are in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tim Pawlenty on the ticket. Helps Norm Coleman, who looks like he has a 15-point lead now, which is incredible.
I think Al Franken has collapsed as a candidate, nearly collapsed.
Yeah, well, which is amazing, because Coleman came into this election with one of the most vulnerable Republican incumbents. And who is the most vulnerable Republican incumbent?
Right now, John Sununu.
It is John Sununu. And yet, there's a new poll that also has him picking up steam as well.
I think all of these things are oil drilling.
Yeah.
All these things are oil drilling. The $4 gasoline issue, which you think would be a killer for an administration run by two oil men, is not hurting the Republican Party more generally, because they got right out there and said, we've got to increase supply by getting rid of this Democratic-driven ban on offshore drilling.
We can't do anything. We, the Republicans, can't do anything about George W. Bush. We can't do anything about the war in Iraq. But we can go on the offensive with the rising gas prices and put the blame on Democrats.
Despite the fact, though, that a couple of these races are starting to look a little better for the Republican Party, despite that, Chuck Schumer, who, of course, chairs the campaign committee for the Democrats in the Senate, is out there pretty close to predicting they're going to get to 60 votes, which I don't think anybody really believes is plausible. But he's got 11 seats he's looking at. He's got 51 right now.
Okay, everybody
he's
agrees.
Thinking if he gets 9 out of 11, he gets to 60, counting Joe Lieberman.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Because, I think that's another
because
thing.
Because Joe Lieberman looks like he's destined to speak at the Republican convention, as Zell Miller did 4 years ago.
And that means out when he gets
back
to the
certainly
Senate.
Out as chairman of the
he will lose his chairmanship. Yeah. He will probably not be welcome any longer into the Tuesday luncheons of a Democratic Party. Hey, he can still help him get to 60 votes to close off debate when he happens to agree with the Democratic majority. But
when they pick up at least 4 seats, they pick up Virginia, they pick up Colorado, they pick up New Mexico, perhaps New Hampshire, perhaps, as Chuck Schumer says, Alaska.
Doubtful.
I agree with you, but
then they could afford to tell Joe, you go have lunch with the other guys.
Exactly, right.
And I think that they might very well do that. I still don't see 60 anywhere in the cards, but Chuck Schumer says so. And Chuck Schumer was right in 2006, and we were wrong.
He's one of the two best senators from New York.
I think you'd have to say that. I think you'd also have to say that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. You're gonna get it straight from the shoulder. Can't you see the party's over?
I'm Billy now.